Good morning, everybody, and welcome to this week's conversation. We're here with State Representative Tiffany Mitchell. Perhaps the best way to start, Tiffany, is for you to, as we always do, explain the geography of your district.
Well, thanks for having me here, John. The geography of the district is all of Clatsop County down to about 3rd Street in Tillamook, and then we have a little bit of Washington County as well. Banks and Gaston are the big areas that we have over in Washington County. And as my colleague, Representative Gomberg, always says about the Tillamook stuff that we represent, is that I have the creamery and all the people, and he has all the cows on his side. So.
Okay. So this is a conversation, a call-in show, where you all, the listeners, get to go on the air and have a conversation with Tiffany Mitchell, Representative Mitchell. And we've got a few topics we want to go through today. We want to talk about the recent listening session that Tiffany just had out on this Monday, and things that were said and questions that came up. Also, there was an attempted recall on Representative Mitchell a while back, and we wanted to go through the mechanics of that and the outcome. And then we'll finish up with the session agenda that Representative Mitchell has for the upcoming short session. First, though, the last time we were here, you were getting...
May I mention something, John? The phone number is 503-325-0010.
Thanks. When we were here the last time, you were getting ready to donate one of your kidneys and go into the hospital for that, and then you had a recovery period. And I thought maybe you could just briefly take us through that. And one question I have is, presumably when someone gives an organ, it needs to be relocated quickly. And I was wondering if you knew where your kidney ended up.
I know that it went somewhere to the East Coast. I remember them telling me Washington, D.C. area, but in terms of like exactly where it went and who it went to, I don't know. I really should sit down and write a letter to the recipient. I haven't had time to do that yet. And just to make sure that they're doing all right, I presume that they are. So
when this happens... obviously, a living donation. Is there secrecy involved? Like the recipient, would they know?
There's definitely secrecy in terms of for HIPAA regulations and privacy purposes. Like, I can't initiate contact with them unless they are willing to receive that contact, and I won't know their identity unless they have signed a release that gives me the opportunity to know that, and they give me permission to know who they are. So we have to both want to get to know each other, to know who each other is. I imagine they probably at least know that the kidney came from a living donor as opposed to a deceased donor. They more than likely know that. I imagine, since I know, you know, that they're in D.C. So, but other than that, like, unless we really both make an effort to connect, we won't ever know who each other is.
Did you get to see your kidney?
I did not get to see my kidney. I was pretty out of it at the time. So, no, I didn't get to see the kidney. I didn't get to see it afterwards, because basically they take your kidney from the operating room and then they give it to a courier who takes it to the airport. In this case, my kidney went from the surgery room to, like, from the operating room to a courier. That courier took it to Seattle, and then it had to get on a plane from Seattle to go back east so that that person could get the operation the next morning.
Would you be interested in talking to the recipient?
I'm always interested in talking to the recipient just to see how they're doing. But for me, it's honestly not the end-all be-all. That wasn't the reason I did it. I just am happy to know that somebody out there is walking around doing well and that they have family and friends that have their loved one for a little bit while longer.
Well, that's the epitome of generosity, without question.
I appreciate that. I hope more people, I have to always put in this plug, I hope more people consider this as well. Living organs are much more effective and longer lasting than deceased organs. And we have a severe shortage of living organ donors. So hopefully more people consider that.
Well, if for non-living organ donors, my understanding of the procedure, if you want your body parts to go to a good use after you're deceased, it's a pretty simple matter of just going to the DMV and getting that on your driver's license?
You can go to the DMV and you can get that on your driver's license. You can also do it online. Through Donate Life Northwest, the organization that I worked very closely with and still work pretty closely to try to encourage living organ donation. They actually have something on their website that you can click on and it takes you to the DMV and you can sign up there to be a living organ donor, or not living organ donor, pardon me, a deceased organ donor.
This is The Conversation, and the phone number here is area 503-325-0010. If you have any questions for Representative Mitchell on any of the topics that we're going to bring up, including organ donation, give us a call here. Operators are at the ready. We also, on Monday, you had a listening session, and I thought maybe you could take us through the hot topics of that session. And I wanted to invite to call in anyone who is with Timber Unity or would feel they could ask some questions or answer some questions in regard to the agenda and so forth of Timber Unity, so you can help us understand that. So it's 503-325-0010. So Representative Mitchell, tell us about
the listening session.
The listening session.
So the listening session was kind of born out of this idea that I wanted to do something different than a typical town hall. For people who have gone to my town hall, or probably any town hall from a lawmaker, including our federal delegation, usually the person just like stands in front of a big room. They give a little speech and then they answer questions. And to me, that has always felt, I don't necessarily think impersonal, but, you know, impersonal, because you don't really get that opportunity to talk to the official and have them know that you heard them. And so the idea behind this listening session, we did one in Tillamook on Sunday, Banks on Sunday, and then Astoria here on Monday, was to really give people that opportunity on a more personal level to let me know their concerns. I really didn't want to spend the time talking. I wanted to listen to people. And that half worked, half didn't, because inevitably people have questions. You want to answer their questions. But I really just wanted to give people that time to talk and to also connect with other community members, which ended up being the case, I think, in all the listening sessions. We would have people from totally different backgrounds, totally different political perspectives, all getting together and realizing, oh, we're all community members here. And one of the things I told people up front was, assume best intent. We all live here. We all want the best thing for our communities. We just may differ slightly on the perspective of how to get there. But the first most important piece is building the relationship and assuming that we are all good people who all want to do the best that we can.
What was the first question, or the one that seemed to be the most important to the people who attended?
So it depended really on where we went. Obviously, carbon came up in all of those discussions, no matter what. We got a lot of questions about property taxes, particularly from seniors who are really concerned about their ability to stay in their homes. I think part of that actually came a little bit out of the recall, because there was some misinformation spread as part of the recall that I think people thought you didn't support property taxes for seniors being, lowered, and that was not true. But it was something that, you know, I think because people had that top of mind, they wanted to talk about it. We also, probably unsurprisingly, had a lot of conversations, particularly in Tillamook, about the concept of spraying, aerial spraying, particularly in the timber industry, forestry practices. And again, it was just a really fascinating opportunity to hear from people about what they really cared about and what their perspectives were, and to give me an opportunity to ask people too, you know, if you want me to support something or don't support something, please provide a constructive criticism or a constructive way of delivering that criticism about what you would like to see, rather than, you know, don't support this. Because at least with any kind of legislation, the reason it gets proposed is not for some arbitrary reason of, you know, like we want to hurt somebody, there's almost always like a problem at the root of it. And if there's a legitimate problem, then we want to be able to solve that problem. And I'd like to hear what people would rather see to be a solution rather than just doing nothing at all.
Yeah.
And that I think that's somewhat the point of this show that we're presenting, is to have an open discussion and not to just bash each other, mm-hmm. but to really listen to one another. Because, and I love that idea of people don't just present things for no reason whatsoever. The folks at Timber Unity aren't presenting their ideas because they think it's going to hurt you or they think it's going to cause some sort of a mess. They're doing it for legitimate reasons, as is anybody on any political side. I think we have a caller. Hello, this is KMUN, and you're on the air right now.
Hi, I just wanted to call and thank Representative Mitchell for making people aware of the real benefits of organ donation, not just to the recipient, but also to the families and the people who love them. I've known someone who received a kidney donation, and I also knew someone who died on the transplant list waiting for a donation, and so I'm really aware of what a blessing it is and how desperately needed transplants are. So thank you for making us all aware of this and causing people to think about what they can do and whether it's something that they can consider in their own lives.
Well, thank you for bringing that up, and I really appreciate you calling in to talk about that, because for me, that's one of the things I'm most proud of in my session. You know, it's a not necessarily, you know, within the scope of what my job is, but being able to be a state representative that has that, you know, notoriety to be able to be in a position to make people aware of it is something that I really wanted to use so that people would consider that themselves. Since you know someone who died while they were waiting on the transplant list, it's important to let people know that like 13 people die every day in the United States waiting for a transplant.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We had great hopes that she would get her transplant because she was at a certain point on the list, and the year before people had reached that point, and she just didn't fit the right size requirements for the heart and lungs that were made available, but you can't anticipate that. But with something like a kidney, there's so many that can be made available. Or livers even, you know. Mm-hmm. There are things people can do and then go on about their lives knowing that they have made a huge difference and that other people are going on about their lives. And with something like post-mortem donations, you can make your family aware too, because I think a lot of people feel like they want to be donors, they've signed the little box, but then you have some sort of a tragedy, and does your family know that that was something that really mattered to you? That's really important, because in a time of trauma, a time of crisis, they may not be aware that that was something that was deeply important to you that they need to mention to the doctors, and it's hard for an ER nurse or a trauma doctor to bring that up sometimes. So,
yep. Well, thank you. I appreciate that so much.
Well, thank you very much. It makes me happy every time I hear you say that, and I especially appreciate you focusing on the positive, because there's so much positive. A life after dialysis is a tremendous life, and the difference people feel once they are released from dialysis is a beautiful thing to see. So you may not get to see that from the person to whom you donated, but I can guarantee that they are feeling it and appreciating you every day.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thanks for the call.
Thanks. Bye.
We're here at Area 503-325-0010 with Representative Tiffany Mitchell. Wanted to move the topic a little bit into, and again, if you're a member of Timber Unity or you understand their agenda and could help us understand it, please give us a call. I just wanted to go through the recall, and maybe you could talk about the mechanics of it as you understand, and the rationale behind it. And it would be hard to, I think, to not become hurt by an uproar that just don't want you in position. And I wonder how that affected you personally.
Personally, I mean, no matter what, like, I have people tell me all the time, you can't take this sort of thing personally, because, you know, what you do as your profession is separate from who you are as a person. But I, you know, I think most people somehow identify in some way with what they do professionally and who they are personally. That becomes a part of who they are and how they identify themselves as. So I will say, no matter what, like, it hurt a little bit because you don't like to think that you have upset people so much that they feel like this is the direction that they need to go. So it was stressful from that perspective. There were some projects that I wanted to complete as a state representative to start, not necessarily complete, but to keep moving forward before we got into the short session that got sidelined because I had to focus on the recall. But, you know, I'm just happy that it's over now.
Did it just fizzle out or did it reach a legal conclusion?
You know, it fizzled, but I would like to say that I think that the reason it did has more to do with the fact that people are intelligent. One of the really big things about this recall that didn't get brought up by the folks who were behind it, obviously, but I think people realized was that recalls should, I think, be reserved for really egregious cases where someone has done something illegal. And in this case, I just happen to have policy differences and disagreements about particularly climate change, which was one of the really big reasons that the recall launched. And I think people realize that. And then secondly, I think people realize that as a state representative, I'm up for election every 2 years. This was potentially a very expensive thing to do. Some of the numbers that got batted around was that it would have cost taxpayers like $50,000 to be able to have a recall election. So I think people kind of thought to themselves, especially if you're more on the side of like fiscal responsibility, like, why would we spend $50,000 to have a special election on someone who hasn't done anything wrong when we get the opportunity to do this next November if we really feel that way?
Trying to gauge the politics of the larger area, you voted for 2020, the carbon bill. If you hadn't, would you have still had those folks taken a swing at you?
I don't know if I would have had a recall effort launched against me as a result of that, only because the Timber Unity Group, I think, you know, House Bill 2020 was, or the cap and trade bill, or whatever people want to call it, the climate change bill. I prefer to call it the climate change bill because I think we really do need a solution to combat the climate crisis. That was a real flashpoint to bring people together who felt like they didn't agree with it for, you know, one reason or another. And if that group hadn't assembled and signaled to, I think, people in the political realm who had maybe some other ideas about what they wanted to do to further politics in Oregon on the conservative side, I think they identified Timber Unity as an opportunity to leverage that passion and to test whether or not certain strategies would work to try to defeat Democrats who might be in office. And I think I was that test case with this right. particular recall.
It seems that in America, at least, moving even more broadly, perhaps internationally, that first step is yet to be taken where everyone on Earth would agree that there is an upcoming climate problem, and we still
an existing climate problem. Actually, it's going to get worse, but we actually are already feeling the impacts of climate.
Yeah, it
change.
Seems like in America we still can't take even the baby step to admit that it's happening. And I wonder if you ran into that in your district.
So, you know, it really kind of depends. People are all over on this subject. You have plenty of people who I think would agree with me that, you know, climate change is happening, we need to do something, and people who trust that I did everything that I could to really understand this policy that we were trying to pass and to understand why, for example, a cap and trade system is better than, for example, a carbon tax, which is actually a question that came up at the Tillamook listening session. The person who asked the question supported a carbon tax because they felt it would be best way to actually like change behavior. And the truth is, that is true, but you have to have a carbon tax that is high enough to change behavior. And that is the hard part, is getting people to vote for a carbon tax that is high enough. And it just, it doesn't happen.
Well, that's the calculation mm-hmm. on the plastic bags. Is mm-hmm. a dime enough to change behavior, or should plastic bags cost a dollar?
I think for I think we did what we could with the plastic bags to try to strike that balance to where it doesn't hurt people who really could be struggling financially, but it is enough of a reminder to people to change their behavior, because it's a pain in the butt to have to, you know, pay the extra every time. It reminds me, I'll use the straw ban as an example. So I've heard a lot of people who really feel very inconvenienced by the fact that, you know, they have to ask for a straw now if they want one. I have now gotten to the point of where, like, I actually went and bought a reusable straw. There's a great product out there called Last Straw, and it's a reusable straw, and I went out and actually bought one. That's obviously not going to be the case for people who are struggling, but that's why we have a lot of different exemptions built in to try to help those people.
So. Right, right. It just seems to move for everyone to move forward on climate change and make some progress in trying to fight it. It can change everything we do, because the way we've lived for so long is the culprit mm-hmm. that produced all this carbon that's causing the problem. And, you know, the plastic straw thing, if you listen to right-wing radio or Fox News, it's a laughingstock issue for them, and they put it on their list of things when they talk about how ridiculous climate change advocates are.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's unfortunate. I think really what I would like to do is to see us be able to come around together around the science and the fact that this is happening, and to create solutions that really help to benefit everyone. I would like to say that the carbon bill that we had last session really attempted to do that. Obviously, there are people who disagree with that, and I want to hear more from those folks. But I really am very just interested in hearing alternatives. If you don't want us to do X, tell me another thing that you would like us to do that would be constructive and help us to get to our emissions goals, while at the same time meeting what you want to. Because at this point, we're beyond having a discussion about whether or not we need to reduce emissions. We have to. So help me figure out how to do this in a way that is something you would be happy with.
Right. I just I don't know if it's a more pessimistic viewpoint, but I still don't know if your premise is accepted by so many people that we have to do something.
And
because everything we do is resisted.
And I kind of touched on that a little bit with my listening session when I said too that, you know, people are sort of all over the place. There are people who believe in what I do. There are people who are outright in denial of the fact that change is happening. I saw a comment on a Facebook page where someone said sea levels are not rising, and that is false. They are. There are scientific ways that we actually know, like, for example, through ice cores and by looking at the type of carbon molecules that are, you know, in the atmosphere, that we know that human-caused greenhouse gas emissions are what is causing climate change at the direction that we're going. Now, that said, there are folks, even within the Timber Unity movement, for example, that will acknowledge that greenhouse gas emissions are a problem and that we need to reduce them. But it goes back to the same frustration that you just expressed, and this is the frustration for me. It feels like every time we say, okay, if let's talk about those of us who do agree on the science, how do we move forward then in reducing greenhouse gas emissions? It just feels like no matter what we do, nothing is good
right.
enough.
So it says 503-325-0010. If you'd like to speak with Representative Mitchell, ask her a question or comment on comments. That's what the show is about. I was wondering about, is there a cluster of dissatisfaction with Democrats in general? Like, was your recall strictly climate change, or were guns involved?
Firearms did not come into the discussion over the the recall, and I think a big part of that is we didn't really do anything about firearms this last session. There was a bill that would have done some things that honestly didn't get passed the Senate because that was the first Senate walkout. And so that was part of the trade that the governor made with the Republican Senate to basically bring them back. So we didn't do anything with that. So guns were not a part of it. I haven't made any votes or positions that I think they would be able to be angry with me for that. They launched that recall primarily out of the carbon bill, the Student Success Act that we passed, and then a bunch of other things that, frankly, many of my Democratic and even some Republican colleagues also voted for, but for whatever reason.
Was that a frustration for you that you were picked as a target when your colleagues, maybe notwithstanding 2020, but broadly voted in line with what you did?
It was a frustration for me because it kind of harkens back to this idea that for me, like, Timber Unity is a group of people who are people who really care about the subjects they care about. But when I said that I feel like the recall would have never happened if an outside group of political folks didn't see this as an opportunity to leverage for their own purposes, certain things would never come up. So, for example, if you look at the website that they created for the recall, there were a number of pieces of legislation that a bunch of different people voted on, both Democrats and Republicans, primarily Democrats, because, I mean, some of these issues were kind of like those defining differences between Republicans and Democrats that you would typically expect. And the other people who voted for those things are never called out for having voted on those things. It's me. But I understand it from a political perspective, like as a state representative, as a brand new state representative who, you know, I think people see that and think that that person is vulnerable because they're new and voted for the Flashpoint issue, the carbon bill, that's why I was selected. If it had worked, I think it probably would have been a strategy that would have extended on to others.
Right. We've got a few minutes left, and I thought you could take us through what's coming up.
Sure.
And your level of optimism, and is there going to be something like 2020 abridged or put on the table again?
Yeah. I will try to keep my comments mostly focused on a carbon bill, just because I think that's probably what most people are interested in, knowing that that's what derailed the session last time. So a lot of things are going to happen in the short session. I'm going to have a bill that will make it easier for physicians' assistants to practice, which essentially will just kind of get rid of some of the onerous requirements that PAs have when they practice. So hopefully we can expand access to medical care here in the district. So that's a big thing.
Let me ask you a question about
that.
So physician's assistant is one who is trained but not a doctor, but mm-hmm. works under the supervision of a doctor.
Yes.
And currently they are disallowed to do certain things, and you're saying you could open that up?
It won't be that, no. It will just give them a little bit more freedom in the same way that a nurse practitioner is able to practice.
What would be something specific that they could do that they can't do now?
Well, again, it's not necessarily what they can and can't do. It better defines the relationship between a physician and a physician's assistant. So, like, for example, right now, a physician's assistant, as I understand it, has to really have like the direct supervision of a physician. But things have really changed in Oregon to where like a physician's assistant will be hired by a large group, so like a hospital or something. And it just makes for more paperwork, and it makes it harder for them to do their jobs. So nothing is really going to change in the practical sense of like how they do their work, but it will just be easier in terms of paperwork for allowing them to do that.
Is there an issue with healthcare providers in rural Oregon or in your district?
In the district, yes. Rural Oregon in general, yes. This will end up helping to make more of those available and make sure that we actually get more physicians assistants practicing in rural areas where it's typically been harder. I do want to go on to some of the other bills since I know we don't have a lot of time. Another bill, I'm actually working in conjunction with SEIU to try to create standards around contracting with when the state contracts with contractors to ensure that there are standards for example, pay and equity from that standpoint, because we want to make sure that there is equity and benefits that are extended to, for example, state employees versus contractors. I'd like to see more equity with that. And then finally, with a carbon bill, since I know we're short on time, there will be three different concepts that are going to be proposed, one on the House side, one on the Senate side, and one from the governor. They keep the general same structure as the last carbon bill in that it will still be a cap and invest strategy. So there will be regulated entities that will be required to, you know, trade credits, because again, this is the most effective strategy for reducing greenhouse emissions. But there is talk on the Senate version of a more delayed implementation strategy for rural areas, so that we focus the bulk of the effort on where the vast majority of the greenhouse gas emissions are coming from, which is urban Oregon, so that we can hopefully give rural communities time to catch up.
Would the places you're talking about, the urban areas, be amenable to this?
From what I understand, yes. I have not been a huge part of those discussions because a lot of that's happening in the Senate. And, you know, we operate on a committee basis. And so a lot of my efforts have been on the things that are in my committees. But I can tell you that's from what I have heard in the conversations that I have had around this, because I know this is a very hot topic for our district.
Is Astoria urban?
We are rural.
We're rural.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
So, yes.
And the whole area around here?
Yes. So the entire like coastal region I would consider to be rural in terms of what we consider that to be. The important thing to know is that, you know, we only had one regulated entity in the district before. And so it's not like we would have been tremendously impacted anyway in the bill in terms of regulation. This will, I think, make it easier and try to ease some of the concerns people have.
Thank you, Representative Mitchell. And we should be paying attention to all these things.
Yes.
And when does the session begin?
February 3rd, I believe. So.
Okay.
Yep.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. This is KMUN Astoria, 91.9 KTCB Tillamook, 89.5.